The following program is paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Each weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Now, here's Talking Health with Lisa Platt on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, afternoon today, Kyle Bailey with County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer. We've been spending a number of weeks here over the past 3 months or so exploring things related to COVID-19, both worldwide, statewide, locally, and definitely a day to talk about it because, Dr. Bob, a lot coming out in the news today.
There is a lot coming out almost every day.
And in studio today for the first time in a while, that works out well. I wanted to jump right in. We kind of adapted what we were going to talk about originally just as the day has gone on. About 3 hours ago, or maybe a little less than that, the governor's office putting out a statewide face covering requirement going into effect in indoor public spaces beginning on Wednesday. Now, we've already had 7 counties that have been had this in effect for a number of days. Another one was going to be added in as well, but now the move. Talk about why you believe the step was taken.
So when we went to phase one and then to phase two, we thought we might see some more cases. So there's always a trade-off. The more you open up, the more people do, the more there is going to be spread of this disease. What we've seen is indeed the disease has spread, but it's spread a lot more and a lot faster and a lot further than we thought. So as you'll remember, we were back around 20 to 80 cases a day. Over the weekend, we were over 200 cases a day each of the days. Now, some of that is due to more testing and better case finding, but the overwhelming majority of that is due to more transmission. So unless we want to go back to times where we're going to have phase one or lockdown, we really need to do something to decrease the spread. And the one thing that's available that we haven't done very well so far is using face masks. So I think this is a logical move.
Now, we have heard in the past, really past 5 or 6 days, some other states having similar issues and taking similar steps and even going back into, as we would look at it in Oregon, phase one, taking in some cases restaurants, bars, et cetera, off the table, other places like that. That was one of the things in the release today talking about, and I've got the governor's notes here somewhere in front of me from the press release, about the desire to keep the business sector going, and that her view that this was a necessary step to do something about this situation.
So we have seen in Texas and in Florida that they actually had to move back. So in Texas, they were doing elective surgeries. They had to stop doing those. In Texas, they closed down bars. In Florida, they closed down bars. And, you know, we have thought that closing things down again is going to be really, really difficult for these businesses. You know, many of these businesses spent the last savings they had. They used PPP loans during the shutdown. They're just now getting back into business, and to close them down again would be devastating. So we don't want to do that. So if we don't want to do that, our two options are to either accept this large number of cases, which I think is totally unacceptable, or to use some new ways to go ahead and decrease spread. And the one that's out there, in addition to the ones we've always recommended about staying home if you're sick, socially distancing, and avoiding traveling, is to use face coverings.
Face coverings are still people, I think, are kind of uneasy with them.
People are uneasy with it. It really is a big change. So I tell people that, you know, there were years where I didn't wear a tie and then I had to wear a tie every day. That was a big change. It took a long time to get used to the idea of this thing around my neck doing it. But I got used to it. And I had to do it because I needed to do it for my job. Now I think you need to do it to protect other people and maybe to protect yourself. So we're asking people to make masks part of their new daily routine.
Now, at the front end of the pandemic, admittedly, there was sort of uneven thoughts about face coverings from the federal level.
Unfortunately, there's been a lot of confusion about face masks. And I think what we can tell you, though, is that face masks very clearly decrease the spread from people who are pre-symptomatic. That is, if I was exposed 5 or 6 days ago and I'm going to be coming down with symptoms in the next day or two, I know that in those days, the people can be very contagious, and they don't know they have it yet. So even though they're doing everything right, they could still spread it to lots of people. And so we really want people to use face masks to protect others. Now, Dr. Birx was on the news yesterday, and she said it may protect you a little bit, too, and it might protect you a little bit, and that's a good sign. So we are really recommending face coverings. Now, some people really hate masks, and there are options besides masks. You can use a balaclava, as I do, or you can use a face shield. You know, there are a lot of people in society that use face shields all the time. So if you're working in a welding shop or working in a grinding shop, these guys wear face shields most of the day and kind of get used to it. And again, face shields are perfectly adequate covering for people who do not want to use face masks.
And I understand, though I don't think it's been totally spelled out to the public yet, that it's likely that we're going to see a lot of teachers this fall in whatever form school ends up taking wearing face masks because of the need to instruct in a way where children, if they're watching you, or whether it's online or in person, can actually see your lips move, see your expression, which is harder to do with masks. And so it seems like face shields is something that's going to be probably around a lot of schools.
Well, that's another advantage of face shields. Another advantage of face shields is that you obviously can see the mouth as it moves. These modern face shields also flip up. So if you're eating or drinking, you can easily take them down without touching your face. Now, one of our concerns about face masks is that people do tend to touch their face a lot when they're using a face mask to try and readjust it or whatever. And we knew that touching your face is a risk factor. So face shields can be very useful in that way. There are some commercially available face masks that are really quite durable and easy to clean.
One of the things the governor's statement talked about today, not only going over the numbers increasing fairly aggressively in the past couple of weeks, but also the fact that we've got the 4th of July holiday coming up and looking back at seeing an uptick of cases after the Memorial Day holiday.
So, you know, anytime there's a holiday, people have a tendency to do things that can increase spread. So one of those is travel. So we do know that for Memorial Day that people did travel to other places to visit friends or relatives with a three-day weekend. That makes sense sometimes to travel. The other thing that people did is they had parties, and parties tend to be a source of lots of spread. And so for those reasons, we worry about it. So for 4th of July, what we're asking people to do is to really limit the travel. Almost all of our recent cases are associated with travel outside of the county and mostly outside of the state. You'll have to remember that in California, they have 4,000 cases every day. And there's a lot of disease there. There's a lot of disease in Washington and the Yakima Valley. And so traveling to those areas can really bring the disease back. So we're really, really, really asking people to think about travel. And then if you are going to have parties, doing them outside, much safer than doing them inside. And if you can do social distancing, and usually on the outside you can. So setting your lawn chairs 6 feet apart makes it a pretty safe adventure.
You know, we actually did that a couple of weeks ago with some friends in the neighborhood. Got a big backyard, a really big table. Actually, I'd never been in their backyard before, even though I'd been at their house a number of times. And that's exactly what we did. Spread around a big table that could have easily probably fit 10 people, and it was just the four of us. And so had a nice evening out there, just chatting, having a glass of wine.
Right. And so the evening was different maybe than before, but still totally enjoyable.
So looking at this 4th of July holiday, the other thing when you talk about folks getting together, all these things that normally are happening around the 4th of July, of course, aren't happening. Locally, we do have a fireworks show. Not every community has that this year, but ours is right over here to my right, as if you were watching me, on Reservoir Hill. But no gatherings like we've had in past years at Stewart Park or the fairgrounds.
Right. So in the past, we've had some really nice gatherings. The food trucks one year, usually the week after 4th of July, we have graffiti where lots of people gathered, and those will not happen this year. Those were relatively moderate risk activities with lots of people milling about. But I think we can still enjoy the fireworks. I think we can still enjoy friends. I think we can still enjoy the great outdoors for the 4th of July.
Have you, in talking to maybe other folks in similar roles to what you have here in other parts of the state, Any sense about how the use of face masks kind of varies in different regions so far?
Yes. The use of face masks varies widely in Oregon, although not tremendously. There are some places where there's very little face mask use. For example, I think Douglas County, where probably now 10 or 20%. There's some of the other counties, eastern Oregon, that have had no cases, that apparently there's no face mask use. And then there are other areas that are up to about 50%. And so we really would like to get 60% throughout the places in the state where the virus is circulating.
I talked to somebody who was up in a very rural area on the North Coast last week in a vacation home, and they said there they were expecting actually maybe more use just because it was further north. They actually saw a lot less use than they saw in Douglas County.
Yeah. So it does vary. It does vary area to area. But I think now with the governor's new suggestion, we should hopefully try and get to well above 50%.
Now, I know the governor's office, I've been in communication with them in the past hour or so. And of course, they're ahead of this statewide requirement beginning on Wednesday, kind of reworking some of the guidance, some of the paperwork. But looking at what was put out for Clackamas and Multnomah, Washington, and several of the other counties that have had the mask requirement for several days, one of the things they talk about is indoor public spaces. And the question I've gotten about six times in the past hour from people in the building, people texting me, whatever, is what is an indoor public space?
So an indoor public space is a space where you're not alone in a room. So if you're alone in your office, that is it's an indoor public space. Masks are not needed. But any area where you're going to be around others and perhaps not be able to maintain social distancing, you should wear a mask. So certainly in the hallways, in a lobby, in common waiting areas, we would recommend the use of masking.
And as well, looking at the list from the governor's office, some of the obvious things, grocery stores, pharmacies, public transit, personal services providers, of course, restaurants, bars, etc. And even maybe ones that people don't think about as readily is fitness, whether you're at one of the clubs or the Y or something like that when you're in. And, of course, those vary in terms of how close you might be to people, but you're certainly coming in contact with them going through different parts of the building.
Right. So I think while you're moving from one area to another, you should wear a mask. Once you're seated and safe and you know that you've got good social distancing, you can take down your mask. So I usually wind up at the Y most evenings. And most evenings I go in the spin cycle room where I'm the only person there. And I think then it's perfectly safe for me to take down my mask.
And even, and this will surprise some folks as well, but even places like if you were at a swimming pool, not a private pool in your yard, but for instance at the Y or somewhere else where you might encounter one here or elsewhere, it's different when you're actually swimming, but when you're just sitting there watching others, for instance.
Right. So I think anytime you are seated and cannot maintain good social distancing, maybe because the person is close or there are people walking around, I would recommend the use of a mask.
County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer. We're going to cover more when we come back on Talking Health. It's 419 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon 4:23, the afternoon report at 5 with Douglas County's news team. Of course, Talking Health today will be a podcast after 5 at 541radio.com. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer in studio with us this afternoon. Normally, we start out the program doing what we're going to do here. Let's take the in-depth weekly look at COVID-19 starting at the world level.
So COVID-19, a very active pandemic still. We're over 10 million cases worldwide and over 500,000 deaths. That is a 5% case fatality rate, which is still very high. And on Friday, we hit a new daily high of cases, and I imagine we'll hit a new daily high again today. Still very active in Brazil, India, Pakistan, Peru, Chile, and Russia. And so these are areas, some of which are relatively underdeveloped and have poor healthcare systems, and we're concerned that there could be widespread in these areas. But it's not the same everywhere. New Zealand, a country of about 5 million, only had 4 cases yesterday. And Australia was concerned because they usually had 20. They went to 40 cases in the whole country yesterday. So there are countries that have this well under control, and then others that seem to be in less control. Unfortunately, the U.S. has continued to have lots of cases. We're now up to a total of 2.6 million cases and about 128,000 deaths. So the last 4 days had record number of cases, and we've seen a lot of cases, especially in California, Texas, Florida, Georgia, Arizona, Louisiana. And so these are cases that will have thousands of cases a day or more. Actually, Florida had over 8,000 cases in one day last fall. And when we're looking at these cases, there are a couple of things we're seeing. They're mostly younger people rather than older people, but that's how epidemics start, with the people who are out and around more. Many of these are associated with indoor gatherings, especially at bars, and that's why Florida and Texas have closed bars for use. We think bars are especially a problem because it's really hard to socially distance at a bar, just the way bars work, and because they tend to be loud, so people tend to talk loudly. And we know when you talk loudly, you make more droplets. And because it's hard to hear, people will frequently lean in to hear because it's loud. So that loudness, which causes people to talk louder and lean in, seem to be real issues. Interestingly, they've not been associated with the protests very much, but we're still really carefully looking at that. It would seem hard to believe that with all the protests, you wouldn't have some cases, but there are very few. Now, the protests were mostly outdoors, and although there was chanting, many of the people did have masks on. And so we're still looking to see what's happening with the protest, but especially bars seem to be it. There was a story today, for example, of a bar in Michigan where 85 people in a bar got infected. Now, mostly young people, so none were terribly sick. But we know that the young people are the ones then can bring it home to lots of other people. And when we've looked at our outbreaks here, frequently what happens is one person gets it at some kind of gathering, and then they bring it back and infect others. And they can infect everybody in the household. And then unless we quarantine them, they can spread it to everybody in other households. So we really are worried about those kinds of gatherings. In Oregon, although we've had more cases than we've had before, we still have the sixth lowest attack rate in the country and the fifth lowest death rate. But we added 750 cases over the weekend. That's a lot of cases. And especially some in small counties that don't really have a lot of public health staff to manage these. So Umatilla County, Morrow County, Lake County, all added cases. And those are going to be counties that will really struggle to keep this under control. In Douglas County, we have added a few cases in the last few days. But again, our last four groups, our last four clusters, were all associated with out-of-state travel. That's either people who came from out-of-state into Douglas County or people from Douglas County that went out-of-state and came back. And that's where the disease has been. So the disease is 10 times more prevalent in California and in the Yakima Valley than it is here. So your chance of getting it here is not zero, but pretty small. But if you travel to one of those other areas or travel from one of those areas, the risk of bringing it to Douglas County is high. So we're really asking people to be careful about travel, especially travel to areas where there are sick people. In almost all of these cases, the people were well when they got there, but then became sick during the visit.
Now, so Saturday was the second highest daily case count at 277, or 278 a week or so before. Today, though, it dropped down to 146.
Well, that's good. It's going to go up and down depending upon the cases that are done. Unlike other states where the weekends are relatively low, Oregon does report these out as they come in, so that as tests are done on Thursday and Friday, they come in on Saturday and Sunday. On Monday, these are tests that are being done on Saturday and Sunday. And except for Douglas County, not a lot of people do tests on Saturday. So we test on Saturday in Reedsport, although we only did a few. And so that's why the numbers on Monday look to be low. But I would expect that the numbers are going to continue to be brisk during the week.
You know, looking at Umatilla County, was looking at the statewide numbers, and of course we've got all this up at 541radio.com. Umatilla County, 15 cases in one day.
Yeah. And Umatilla County is not a particularly big county. Now, they are sort of the gateway to the Yakima Valley, and there has been spread in that area. They actually share more with Washington than they do with Oregon, and that part of Washington has really been heavily hit.
Yeah, and just for if people that aren't familiar, that's the Pendleton area and surrounding regions there. And, in fact, folks up there really group the county or two possibly in southern Washington and Umatilla County. It's kind of one big area. Think about it as sort of if Douglas County were in two different states. That's kind of how it's laid out. And it's not uncommon at all for folks to live in Pendleton and work in Washington State or vice versa.
Right. So there's lots of cross-border traffic there. The other place where there's a lot of cross-border traffic is in Ontario. And when we know that we share outbreaks. I think it would be as if the Umpqua River was the border between two states. So people would cross that many times a day and not even really think about it.
Our three highest case counts today, Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas County, the metro region again.
So the metro region has really struggled with this, and what they've really struggled with is sporadic cases. So unlike Umatilla or Lincoln County, where they were associated with one big industrial outbreak, many of the cases in those three counties are kind of sporadic, suggesting the disease is kind of widely spread in those areas.
And still seeing, for instance, Lane County, six cases in one day. And I didn't bring it in with me for this interview, but over the weekend, one or both of the days, as the Oregon Health Authority put out their information, they also printed off a chart that listed the total number of cases over the course of the pandemic. When you look at, for instance, any of the metro counties, the numbers are just amazingly large in comparison to what we're dealing with here.
Right, so Southern Oregon, for whatever reason, has been really blessed during this outbreak. We really had a relatively low number of cases. So if you look at Coos, Curry, Douglas, Josephine, and Jackson counties, we've had some of the lowest attack rates of anywhere in the country.
And also, the Oregon Health Authority release today talking about the numbers steadily increasing. And over the past couple of weeks, I was trying to think, we're at 8,485 cases as of today. It wasn't that long ago, we were at like 4,000.
Right. So it's really increased very, very rapidly. Again, Douglas County, Josephine Jackson County have not increased very much. We think this is somewhat because of protection, but we know right around us, there's a lot of disease in California, and there's a lot of disease in the Portland area.
Now, when we take a look at COVID-19, are there new things that are being learned about the virus in the past week?
There are some new things that are being learned. One is we have great abilities to go ahead and do the genetic fingerprint of this virus. So this virus seemed to have started in November, December, likely in China, and then has spread throughout. And it's sort of if you were making a copy of a complicated something, there would be little errors that would creep up, and that as you went further, these errors would be propagated. So you can look at the family tree of this virus, and it looks like there's been a change in the spike protein that happened a few months ago, and this change in the spike protein makes it so that the spike protein is a little bit better than the previous one, and so it appears that this new mutation makes it a bit actually more contagious than the previous. That's a worrisome thing. The other reason it would be worrisome is that if the spike protein is changing, the spike protein is the target for these vaccines. And if the spike protein changes, it may change the vaccine's ability to work. The other things we found is that Decadron, which is an inexpensive steroid medication, seems to help people have bad disease. And Remdesivir, which is this antiviral agent, does help some people who have it. So we're making some small progress in treatment. I think we're making good progress in vaccines, but I think the vaccines are still several months off.
Well, and normally as well, when you're developing a vaccine, you're talking not months, but years of research.
So generally, vaccines take anywhere from 4 to 10 years, and some germs vaccine for. I mean, look at HIV or herpes, where we've been trying to make vaccines for years and years and years. We've never made a successful vaccine against a coronavirus. And the leading candidate is an mRNA kind of vaccine, and we've never had a successful vaccine using that technology. So there's lots of roadblocks in the future. However, the phase two trials look like they've gone pretty well. We're going to be starting phase three trials in July. And I think that we're really on a fast track to get a vaccine if one can be had.
Going to take a break on Talking Health. More when we come back. A podcast at 541radio.com after 5 o'clock, 434 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Monday afternoon, 437. Thanks for being here. Kyle Bailey, County Public Health Officer, Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, going in-depth to COVID-19. We've been talking about the course of face mask requirements starting Wednesday statewide in indoor public spaces, talking about COVID-19 around the world, some of the statistics in Oregon as well. As now we're already in almost July, hard to believe, though it's true, people are starting to look towards the fall. There's obviously a lot of unknowns when it comes to school this fall. The state information that's out there, like a lot of other things, is probably going to evolve as the summer goes on in terms of what school districts may do. What are some of the things you have heard about? What things are being looked at?
Well, schools are a big area of worry. We know with most infectious diseases that they come in through the parents, they then go with the kids, spread widely among the kids, and then go back to the parents. So, for example, that's how flu spreads, or that's how hand, foot, and mouth disease spreads. That's how norovirus spreads. So adults to kids, widely spread among kids, and then back to the families. This disease is weird in many ways, but one of the ways it's weird is that in a given population, kids seem to get it less than adults, which is a little unusual. When they get it, they get less sick than adults. And the third is they tend not to spread it very much. And that's really quite unusual because kids are usually the perfect spreading mechanisms for disease, but not in this case. And so when other places around the world have opened up schools, they've been pleasantly surprised that schools are not a major source of spread. So in Europe, in Australia, and other places where they've opened up schools, schools have not been a wide source of spread. And in fact, in Oregon, we've not seen that either. In fact, most of the cases we've seen have come from the adults to the kids, and that's what they've seen in the rest of the world. And then, so schools are probably going to be much lower risk than we thought. So if I'd say bars and schools, a lot more outbreaks in bars than in schools, and schools are maybe a bit more necessary than bars.
Well, I know that there are things being looked at, and you've seen what other states are doing that have year-round school or things like that, or other countries that do, maybe having a certain percentage of the kids in the class attend certain days, kind of keeping smaller groups together.
Right, so I think the places that have opened have made some changes, smaller groups, cohorting students, using either face masks or other kinds of barriers for the kids. We think cohorting especially is going to be an important strategy. So cohorting means that the kids in your class, you stay with those kids in your class and don't widely mix. So if you think of the times before where you might take a school bus with one group of kids, play on the playground with another group of kids, go to your class, go to art class where you might spend with other kids, go to lunch where you might spread with other kids. You could infect everybody through the school. I think what we're trying to do now is have smaller cohorts, so if there is an outbreak, it's limited to one room or two rooms rather than the whole school.
And even in the summertime, some of the organizations around the area that are doing events, doing camps, are talking about that cohort concept as well, to where, you know, you're doing a camp in a big facility, you're lower occupancy level, and the, let's say, 10 kids that are in that class, it's those 10 kids together all week.
That's exactly what we're doing. So I work with the Boys and Girls Club about their summer camp. And that's how they're doing it. The problem, unfortunately, with some of these things is that you still need teachers, and a teacher teaching 10 kids versus a teacher teaching 20 or 22 kids requires a lot more teachers and more space, and we're not exactly sure how we're going to do those. In addition, many kids get to school by bus, and we're not sure how you can maintain social distancing on a bus.
Yeah, and I also wonder about when you talk about the cohort groups of kids and then having kids online, let's say, a couple of days a week in school, a couple of days a week. And so then for the teacher and some of the other staff, you're trying to manage kids that are in the room and kids that are not in the room. So it seems like that's going to be a bit of a challenge.
There's going to be lots of challenges. And what I've learned through this pandemic is there's lots of challenges, and some people are incredibly creative in dealing with challenges, and other people who throw up their hands and just curse the darkness. This is a chance for people to really be creative in their solutions.
What about when we talk about the school year in sports?
So we're not sure what's going to happen with sports. Right now, kids can go back to sports where they can be adequately socially distanced. And so we think some sports like singles tennis and cross country will likely not be a big issue. But when we get to a sport like football, I think that's going to be problematic because it's hard to enforce social distancing. In fact, being close is part of the game. You know, these guys on the line facing each other. There's a lot of exuberance there and yelling and shouting and spitting and whatever else. And so we're not sure how we're going to do it. Baseball has already started. We think baseball is a relatively safe activity. Usually done outdoors, there's usually a fair amount of distancing. And if we can stop those fights between the umpires and the managers, it'll be a good thing.
Well, and I understand it well that some of the baseball that is going on in the region, and I don't know, I can't cite specific teams for sure because I've taken a lot of input of information in this regard. But for instance, when they're going elsewhere to play, instead of taking a van or whatever, the players and their families are being asked to each take their own vehicle.
Right. So we think actually the travel to and from games may be more dangerous actually than the game itself. So imagine if a team was going to play against Lapine, say, that's a long bus trip. So that's many hours close together with sweaty guys in a bus. So we may need to think about limiting travel. And so you could imagine being creative and saying, okay, what we're going to do instead is just play within Douglas County. That would obviously decrease the distance. However, I don't think it would be quite fair for Roseburg to play Days Creek.
Well, and you know, we've seen that with some of the college programs that are starting to think about how to reform, and also what some of the I think it's Major League Baseball is doing, where they get folks and they, because they're not in the concept of professional sports, they're looking at playing to stadiums without fans where you can just watch it on TV, hear it on the radio, whatever. But keeping the players in one place and getting a group of players that are in that community that are then sort of a cohort that are all there, and instead of traveling all over, and you think about professional athletes in a typical season, you know, like the NBA, you're on planes two or three days a week, and that doesn't seem to be the model they're you know, going to try to do, obviously.
So I think they're going to try what they call a bubble model, where they have people in a bubble where there's nobody infected. The problem is, when they've tried to do this, there's a lot of infection around. So, for example, on the Clemson team, 37 of their football players tested positive. On the tour this week, 5 golfers tested positive. So it's going to be pretty hard in those areas to keep it out. And people, you know, people who live in Douglas County find it hard to sort of understand that. So to give you the idea, so in Douglas, so if you look at the number of cases per 10,000, which is not unreasonable, in Douglas County, we're about 3 in 10,000. In the state, we're about 18 in 10,000. In the rest of the country, they're about 75 per 10,000. So, I mean, that would be like us having 750 cases here. Then people would truly see what goes on. So when we live in a low incidence county, it's hard to really understand what everybody's talking about. We've had no deaths yet. We have nobody in the hospital locally. So people don't quite get the fact that it would be very different right now if you're in Houston. It would be very different right now if you were in Southern California, where you'd have a lot of people in the hospital, a lot of deaths. There'd be people you know who are either very sick or dying.
You know, I have a number of relatives and some good friends who are all around the Denver area, and that's the place in the U.S. that I've probably spent the most time my entire life. And I don't remember the number, but it was dramatically higher than the Portland area for Denver Metro, which is a fairly similar sized place.
Yeah, so it really does vary place to place. So I've told this story before, but the hospital that I was born in is called Wyckoff Heights Hospital in Brooklyn. And Wyckoff Heights Hospital had one of the highest case rates. So high, in fact, that they had refrigerator trucks parked outside to collect all of the dead bodies. And so that is just a heartbreaking view of what it's like. And then you come to Douglas County and you say, well, you don't have anybody in the hospital. It's hard to see such a great difference between them. Now, the difference, I think, is that we're considerably more isolated. Brooklyn is one of the most racially, ethnically, geographically diverse places in the world. People coming from all over the world to shop and do things in Brooklyn and bringing in disease, whereas we don't have much of that in Douglas County. And then people are really on top of each other. So here, people say, what do you mean you couldn't do social distancing? Well, you just have to go to New York City for a week, and you understand that your ability to do social distancing in New York would be very much different than it is here in Douglas County.
Now, where some people here with their jobs have been working from home, depending on what they did, who they work for, different agencies have had different guidance. But for people that I know professionally that work in Los Angeles and New York City, I don't know one person who's working in their office right now.
Well, because they had such bad disease there that they really didn't want to use public transit. And most people in the city get around with public transit. Most people do not have cars, and most places are too far to walk. So most people were using a bus or subway, and those are areas where you just could not enforce social distancing.
Very different than Douglas County. We're going to do our final segment when we get back. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, 448, Talking Health, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Final segment, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer looking at COVID-19. Well, we mentioned this a bit earlier. We got the big 4th of July holiday, and with the warmer weather here and all in that, let's talk about staying safe this summer.
So staying safe this summer, let's talk about things not related to COVID. We know that every summer we have a half a dozen or so drownings, and the drownings tend to be people who are not wearing life vests. They tend to be people who do daring things in the water, trying to swim across. So please, please, please be safe. Every year on 4th of July, we lose a few people in drinking-related accidents. So please be careful if you're drinking not to drive. Get a designated driver or wait until you can do it. And then also, it's going to be sunny, I think. And if it's sunny, be careful about sunburn. We think that sunburn is one of the predecessors of skin cancer. So those are all the non-COVID things that I, as the public health officer, are bound to say. But when it comes to COVID, there are a couple of things you can do. The first is, if you're sick, please stay home. The second is, try and avoid travel if you can, because again, almost all of our cases have been associated with out-of-state travel. So avoid travel if you can. If you're planning a big party with people from all over the West Coast, maybe wait till next year on that. The next is, if you're going to do it, to do things outside rather than indoors. Outside is many, many, many times safer than indoors. If you can have an outdoor party or an indoor party, please do it outdoors. If you can, socially distance. If you can't socially distance, wear a mask, wash your hands, and really enjoy. I mean, this is a time where we as a country can celebrate the greatness of this country. And so we still want people to celebrate, but a little differently.
Well, and I've heard about some people in different parts of town, you know, sort of planning some informal things with their neighbors, where essentially the idea is you're going to, for the most part, stay in your own yard, but be out there, you know, when the fireworks go off, and you can watch them, and everybody's got, you know, food, beverage, whatever to enjoy. And you know, the person is not going to be that much farther than they would be if they were actually standing in your yard, for instance.
Right. So you can still enjoy the fireworks. This is not something you have to be touching anybody for. And so if you can socially distance and be outdoors, that would be good advice.
You know, it's been interesting when you talk about traveling outside the area, again, citing the example of the metro area and talking to some people there and talking to some people who have kids there in the last day or because of the higher case count, because so many more people are in that area, people there, in some cases, barely leaving their house at all. Sometimes they're ordering food in. Of course, you can get food delivered these days, or just go pick it up, have it, you know, ready for you at whatever store. A lot of stores offering that service. So you can do all those things. A lot of people, I think, are probably starting to feel a bit isolated. How do you deal with that part?
And I think people are feeling isolated, so we're really encouraging people to have outdoor activities. We know that sun and exercise are two good things for your soul. And again, you can do things with people outside. So, you know, if there are people that you want to see, go for a walk and just stand 6 feet away when you talk, or be at a picnic table 6 feet away from them. Again, the risk of that kind of encounter is extremely, extremely low, even in the highest risk areas. Now, this doesn't mean go to a bar and sit right next to each other and shout in each other's face. That does seem to be a high-risk activity, but being outdoors. You know, Douglas County has had a really remarkable response. It is truly great to see how well county government, county public health, Douglas Public Health Network, and everybody else around in the community have worked together in making this work. We really have truly been blessed by having that great cooperation. You know, I talk with my friends who work in public health around the state, and boy, Douglas County should be very proud of the work that's been done.
And the county and Douglas Public Health Network has been very aggressive as well about contact tracers.
Yes, they have. You know, the county has given whatever resources we need to go ahead and do contact tracing. And, you know, we have a bunch of people who need to be in quarantine, and we're out delivering food and delivering essentials and delivering things that people need so they can stay in quarantine. So we have a dozen or so people in quarantine now. And my job last night was to deliver meals. So I went and delivered dinners for people who are in quarantine. And that's the kind of work that working together with the county, Douglas Public Health Network, and everybody in the community, we can make work.
And in areas that are more rural, and of course it's all relative, because to folks in Portland, we're very rural, but compared to Burns, we're not all that rural.
So we're a mid-sized county in the state, and we have, and I think we're actually the ideal size. Once you start getting the size of Portland, you've got a big bureaucracy, and once you're the size of Burns, you have one person. Here we have enough people to do the work, and we're not so big that we're tied up in bureaucracy. And as I said, you know, we've had great cooperation from everyone around us.
And there have been a number of people, I understand, that are still doing this on county staff that were working in other areas where not as much is going on, fairgrounds, for instance, where they've been sort of repurposed into a new role to help what's going on.
Right. We've had great help. So we were in Reedsport over the weekend, and we had public health people, public works people from Reedsport help us with our drive-through. When we do our drive-throughs here, the fairgrounds have been great help. Public works and fairground staff have helped us with traffic. So we've really, this has been an all-hands-on-deck effort. And I think the good results we've seen can be traced back to that great cooperative effort.
A couple minutes left before we wrap up. Let's go back to where we started out with this statewide face covering requirement starting on Wednesday of this week. And for people that maybe didn't hear the very beginning of the program, talk about your thoughts about that.
So as we opened up, we expected to see more cases, but we've seen more cases now than we expected. And the alternative would be to go back to lower levels of reopening. We really don't want to do that. So the one unused tool in the box that we have is the use of face coverings. So I'm absolutely pleading with people to go ahead and use face coverings so that we can bring our case rate down so that we don't have to consider restrictions on reopening. So face coverings can be a store-bought mask. The advantage of those is that they're easy to get. You can use a homemade face covering, cloth face covering, or as I use, a balaclava. The advantage of that is that you always have it on. Or you can use a face shield if, for whatever reason, you do not want to use a face mask. Any of those work, and they work well. You know, we did a Facebook video that showed how well they worked. They work pretty darn well to go ahead and prevent me, if I'm pre-symptomatic, from giving the disease to someone else.
And as this requirement changes, it's going to be like a lot of other things. It's going to be an evolving process for people, because it does seem like to me, as we've gotten further into reopening, what I'm seeing in stores has been a pullback on people using masks. Not as many people seem to be wearing them.
Well, it varies. You know, some days I'll see more, some days I'll see less. We would just hope that we could get the use of face masks in public spaces to about 60%. If we got it to 60%, we'd be seeing a slowing of the spread. And as we saw a slowing of the spread, a decline in the numbers. And so, other than closing down again, I'm not sure what other strategies are there. So I'm really imploring people to use face masks.
All right, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be in your studio.
That wraps up the program on News Radio 1240 KQEN. The preceding program was paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.